one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, the Phillies win a series against the Washington Nationals. They didn't play great baseball for most of the beginning part of this week, but finished off the series against the Nationals in dramatic fashion. And the kids are all right, everybody. Two rookies make a huge impact in the Phillies' first series win of the season. We'll talk about all that. I've got an interview coming up with Rob Friedman. You may know him better if you're an online baseball fan at all, as Pitching Ninja on the social medias. He's got a new book out called Unhittable: How Technology Mavericks and Innovators Engineered Baseball's New Era of Pitching Dominance. We're going to talk to him about the state of pitching in Major League Baseball and get his thoughts on which Phillies pitchers have the best stuff. And then we will preview the Phillies' upcoming West Coast road trip. All that ahead here on this edition of Hittin' Season. Just a reminder, everyone, to please, as we get this season rolling, tell your family and friends about the Hittin' Season podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you can find your podcasts. That is where we are. So just send them on their favorite podcasting app. Tell them to do a search for Phillies, and you'll see Hittin' Season right there. And of course, you can catch our roundtable episode that we recorded on Sunday night with myself and Justin and Liz over at the WHYY YouTube channel. Just subscribe over there, and you can catch all of our roundtable editions of Hittin' Season. All right, let's get into it. The kids get it done for the Phillies against the Nationals on Tuesday and Wednesday night. And despite playing some pretty, let's face it, repugnant baseball at times this week, especially on Monday in the 13-2 loss to the Nationals, the Phillies somehow get themselves up off the mat and take two of three games from a Nationals team that is likely to finish with one of the worst records in baseball this season. Thankfully, it was the Nationals and not another team. Otherwise, the Phillies do not win. They do not win this series. But it was capped by Sunday's dramatic comeback, a walk-off win in 10 innings after the Phillies were down to their final strike, trailing by two runs in the ninth, managing to tie the game and then win it in extra innings. And two rookies featured prominently in the team's two victories on Tuesday and Wednesday, those being Justin Crawford and Andrew Painter. Justin Crawford on Sunday, a 3-for-5 day for the center fielder. He is off to a red-hot start. He has been the Phillies' best hitter. Justin Crawford has been the Phillies' best hitter through the first week of the season. That's not hyperbole. The numbers back it up. But even just watching him at the plate, he looks like he knows what he's doing more than most of the veterans in the lineup right now. And in the bottom of the 10th inning, with runners on first and third and nobody out, score tied at 5, Crawford hits a first pitch rocket past a drawn-in second baseman to give the Phillies the walk-off 6-5 win. It was the hardest ball he's hit so far this year, with an exit velocity of 106.9 miles an hour off the bat. And I know you, myself, we were all worried about Justin Crawford's ground ball rate. Would it matter in the major leagues? Well, I'll tell you what, if he's hitting the ball like that, if he's striking the ball the way he has in the first week of the season, and he's had his share of slow rollers that he's beaten out for hits, that's all part of his game. That will always be a part of his game. But if he's going to hit rockets, it doesn't matter if he elevates the ball as much as we want him to. And we also saw on Sunday, he does have an ability to elevate the ball and go the opposite way. Hit a double over the head of the left fielder in the game on Wednesday. He's able to hit the ball anywhere on the field that he wants to. He hits it to the opposite way. He's able to pull the ball. He can hit righties. He can hit lefties. I was not high on Justin Crawford coming into the season, and I don't know if he's going to be able to maintain this. The league will catch up to him. They're going to exploit some things as they learn more about him. But right now, he is making the best consistent contact, maybe outside of Adolis Garcia, of anyone on the team. Justin Crawford is the youngest Phillies player with a walk-off RBI since Scott Rolen on June 5th, 1997. Like Crawford, the then 22-year-old Rolen, same age, also hit a walk-off single to right field in the 10th inning of a game on June 5th. And Tucker Bagley on Twitter made an interesting point. He said, it was a pretty interesting choice by the Nationals to pitch to Justin Crawford instead of walking him to load the bases. Now, it would have loaded the bases with no one out, but it would have set up a force out at home. Now, do you normally walk a rookie to bring up a guy like the top of the order and Trey Turner? Well, consider that Crawford has been swinging the bat a whole lot better than Trey Turner in this series. And if you're worried about, okay, well, then Kyle Schwarber's up after that. No, he wasn't. Dylan Moore came into the game as a pinch runner for Kyle Schwarber in the ninth inning. So you could have walked Crawford, set up a force out at home, and then you would have had to face Trey Turner, Dylan Moore, and then Bryce Harper. I'm not so right now. If you put a gun to my head and said, in a bases loaded situation, who do you want up at the plate right now? Justin Crawford or Bryce Harper? Justin Crawford or Trey Turner? You know what? Based on what I'm watching right now, I probably want Justin Crawford up at the plate because he is making the most consistent contact of anyone else in that lineup. He's hitting a team high 412 on the season with a 915 OPS that is highest on the team. So again, these are numbers through six games. No one is expecting Justin Crawford to lead the team in OPS this year. No one believes he's even really going to be a 300 hitter this year. There aren't any of those. Trey Turner won the batting title this year, the only player in the National League with a batting average over 300. He will slow down. He will get cold. You know, he'll go through a slump. He'll probably go through a couple of different slumps. But what it is we're seeing from Justin Crawford is, first of all, quality defense in center field, which people were concerned about coming into the season. Could he be an everyday center fielder? Well, we're seeing he is by far the best center fielder on the team, far better than Brandon Marsh, and he's made a number of pretty darn nice plays out in center. So he's handling the position defensively just fine. We've seen him use his speed on the bases to his advantage and scoring a few runs. He's just been involved in anything the Phillies have done well in these first six games. Justin Crawford has been a part of it most of the time. He's just making an impact all over the place. And then in the game on Wednesday, his first ever career walk-off hit in his fifth start ever. The Phillies' sixth game, fifth start for Justin Crawford. I know earlier this week, people were upset about Rob Thompson resting Justin Crawford for Brandon Marsh in the first game of the series against the Nationals. It doesn't sound like it makes a whole lot of sense. Why are you trying to find an off day for a 22-year-old rookie in the fourth game of the season? But you have to remember, Justin Crawford did play virtually every day in spring training and made all the road trips. He was in the lineup virtually every day because the Phillies wanted to get him ready for the season and see what he had. Let him face as much starting pitching and a lot of these guys in spring training that he was facing. Yeah, they're probably going to start the season in AAA, but there's also a lot of major leaguers that he was facing. Just get him ready for the season. But he played a lot. He played a lot in the spring. He played more than any other Phillies player in spring training. I think he had the most at-bats of anybody in spring training. Maybe Brian De La Cruz had a little bit more, but it was Justin Crawford playing a lot in the spring. So I understood wanting to give the young center fielder maybe a day off here. And that's, you know, that's not the reason they got their doors blown off on Monday. That's not the reason. If sitting your number nine hitter rookie is why you lost 13-2, then that kid has more of an impact than he really should. I mean, that's not why they lost. And so you can say, well, Rob Thompson, why are you doing that? There's a reason. And again, I'm not always going to defend what Rob Thompson does, but Justin Crawford played a lot of baseball in the spring. So maybe that off day on Monday helped him be fresh for Tuesday and especially on Wednesday when he was the hero in extra innings. The other rookie making a big impact in this series, and what an electric night it was at the ballpark on Tuesday night, the big league debut, the long awaited for, much anticipated debut of Andrew Painter. I think folks may have been sleeping on Andrew Painter based off of AAA numbers last year. He looks and looked on Tuesday night like the real deal. He looked like the guy we were dying to see in the starting rotation before he hurt his arm 3 years ago. What a debut for the Phillies' top pitching prospect on Tuesday in the Phillies' 3-2 win. That wasn't Brandon Duckworth out there we were watching, folks. You know, when we got that fool's gold with all those different Phillies pitching prospects we'd see make their major league debut and they dazzle in their first start or two. I don't think that's what we're looking at here, folks. This is a real pitching prospect who did what everyone had been anticipating he could do, as we have been dreaming about him on a mound at Citizens Bank Park. 5 1/3 innings for the young right-hander. He gave up just one earned run. It was a reliever who allowed an inherited runner to score. He gave up a single with one out in the sixth inning. Rob Thompson came to get him. That base runner came around to score because the bullpen wasn't able to keep him. So he's charged with an earned run, but really, Painter was virtually flawless on Tuesday night. 8 strikeouts in 5 1/3 innings, 1 walk, 4 hits allowed, 84 pitches, and as important as anything else, his fastball topped out at 98.7 miles an hour, and he was living 96 to 97. That's the Zach Wheeler velocity right there, folks. That's why, up until last year in AAA, everyone in the sport had him earmarked as not just a good starting pitcher in the major leagues, but a top of the rotation ace potential starting pitcher. The guy he was compared most to was the Yankees' Gerrit Cole, who is one of the best, when healthy, one of the best starting pitchers in Major League Baseball. That is Andrew Painter's ceiling, and it is a very, very reachable ceiling, as we saw on Tuesday night. He had 8 strikeouts on 4 different pitches in those 5 1/3 innings. According to MLB Pipeline, there was just one hard hit ball off of him in 39 swings taken. He averaged 96.7 miles an hour with his 4-seam fastball. And 7 of his 8 strikeouts were against left-handers using off-speed pitches, his curve, his changeup, and his slider. My favorite strikeout of the night, though, was the strikeout that ended the 5th inning, when he reared back and threw 97 miles an hour up in the zone for a strikeout against James Wood. That's a lot of fun. I mean, the Phillies are holding a 2-0 lead. The game is still very tenuous, and Andrew Painter just rears back and blows one by one of the better young hitters in Major League Baseball in James Wood. That was electric. That was very cool. And he got such a great ovation when Rob Thompson came out to get him in the 6th inning. That was a lot of fun to watch him on the mound on Tuesday night against the Washington Nationals. He even has a fan section. Y'all saw the fan section, right? There were actually 2 fan sections. Andrew's Painters was one of them, and then Painter's Painters. The originality of the names, not always there with some of these fan groups, but I like Andrew's Painters, I guess, probably the best. They showed up in the upper decks and had little signs out there. They're all dressed in painting coveralls like they were professional painters. It's fun. And, you know, and I like to bring some of that stuff back. It was a little bit easier at Veterans Stadium to kind of spread out and have the signage and make the little sections your own. It's been a little bit harder at Citizens Bank Park to do those types of fan sections. But I'd like to see those coming back. And it's nice to, you know, it's hard to get tickets at Citizens Bank Park where you can get like a whole group together like that to have these fan sections. But they were able to make that happen here early in the season for Andrew Painter. We'll see how often those guys are a fixture at Andrew Painter's starts at Citizens Bank Park. But a great major league debut and a much needed major league debut effort from Andrew Painter, because the Phillies were coming off of 3 straight losses, right? 2 losses to the Texas Rangers on Saturday and Sunday, and then a brutal game on Monday. That Monday game against the Nationals where they lost 13-2, I do believe that is the very worst game I have seen this era of Phillies baseball play. I cannot remember another game of the Bryce Harper, Schwarber, Trey Turner era playing a game as badly and as uncompetitively, especially against a bad baseball team, as that game. I mean, Taijuan Walker, Rob Thompson after the game, basically, and he was right. The Nationals didn't get a lot of hard contact off of Taijuan Walker, but Taijuan Walker was awful on Monday night. And the Nationals did what they needed to do. And the Phillies offense was, aside from a Rafael Marchand home run, was dead again. Just dead, like a fish flopping on cement, right? I mean, it's just awful. So they needed a big time start from Andrew Painter, and he provided them with a jolt of energy, a jolt of electricity. And folks, this is what this team needs. This team needs a youthful injection of energy and talent to help this veteran group that is struggling, right? The veteran lineup is struggling right now. Almost all of them are having a hard time. And we'll get into some of the numbers here in just a second. They needed these rookies to come in and do what they're doing. You don't want to put that kind of pressure on the rookies. It's not fair to do that. But they are picking up the slack. And that was the hope. When you, instead of going this out this offseason and trading those guys for established major league players, the hope is we have been developing these players. We drafted them in the first round. We've developed them. They've come through the minors. We've spent an awful lot of time. We've turned down a lot of trades, probably, in order to keep these guys in-house. You really do wonder how much different the Phillies season might have gone with Justin Crawford on the major league roster instead of Max Kepler last year. At the end of the day, it didn't really matter because they still won the division by 13 games, and they would have been in the same position probably against the Dodgers. So Justin Crawford's not fixing all those problems against the Dodgers in the playoffs. So it doesn't really matter. But here they are now, providing the jolt, providing the energy that a veteran team, one of the older teams in baseball, a team like that needs a youthful infusion of talent and energy. And so that's what these guys are providing. And it's desperately needed with this group. And they desperately needed Andrew Painter's start on Tuesday. And they desperately needed Justin Crawford's contributions on Wednesday. The Phillies do not win this series without these two rookies making the impact that they did. So that's one of the most encouraging things we've seen here so far early in the season, was the kids coming up and looking like they belong right away. Again, they're going to encounter struggles here in the majors, but it was a good thing to see this week. The Phillies riding Andrew Painter and Justin Crawford, their two rookies, to victories. Some other newsy bits from the Nats series. Hey, big day from Edmundo Sosa on Wednesday, especially late in the game. 2 days after, again, he may have had the worst baseball game I've ever seen him play on Monday. Made a number of terrible decisions playing second base in the platoon role with Bryson Stott. Subbing for Bryson Stott that game. I mean, it was just an awful day all around. He went 0 for 4, a couple of misplays at second base. But on Wednesday, with the bases loaded, two outs, down in the count, 0-2, Nationals reliever Cole Henry hung a curveball that Sosa, or sweeper, whatever it was, that Sosa smashed for a two-run single to left center. And listen, I credit the Phillies for coming back in this game. The Nationals' bullpen is brutal. I mean, Cole Henry had Edmundo Sosa dead in the water in that at-bat, and on an 0-2 pitch, just hung a frisbee right in the middle of the plate for Edmundo. And hey, look, Edmundo Sosa's got to hit the ball, and he hit it hard to left center field to tie the game up, but it was an awful pitch. Just Cole Henry, what are you doing, my man? But Edmundo Sosa smashes a two-run single to left to tie the game at 5 in the ninth inning, and then makes a leaping grab in the 10th inning to secure a double play to get Joan Duran out of the 10th inning scoreless. Kyle Schwarber hit an RBI double in the game on Wednesday, and the Phillies got home runs by JT Realmuto and Bryce Harper, both of them solo home runs. And when they happened, the cynical part of me was trying to get out and was trying to get me to post things on X. It's just, hold your powder, John. Let the whole game play out. Because I was definitely cynical. I'm cynical about the veterans in the lineup right now. And I was going to come on this podcast, and if the Phillies lost, criticize both those guys, because they both have failed numerous times, both to start the season and in the game on Wednesday, to get a big hit in a big spot with runners on base. And really the entire lineup has failed to produce with runners on base. It was a problem last year. That's what happens when you run back the same lineup with the same players. You're going to have the same issues from year to year. And it was a problem last year hitting with runners in scoring position. It has proven to be a problem right now with this team, as really the entire lineup is cold. So I was going to get on him. Like, Harper hit an eighth inning home run, although the team was down by 3 runs. What great, a solo home run in the eighth inning, down by 3 runs. Way to come through in the clutch, Bryce. Right? You know, JT Realmuto, oh, great, a solo home run when you're down 4. Really productive. But those home runs allowed the Phillies to close the gap to just two runs entering the ninth inning and made it a much easier hill to climb for the Phillies offense against, again, a suspect Nationals bullpen. But it does remain a struggle thus far for Harper, who did hit a home run in this game, his first home run of the season, hit a first pitch breaking ball on the inner part of the plate over the right field fence. He admitted after the game he is still chasing too much. He is starting virtually every at bat 0-2. Virtually every at bat against Harper's 0-2. He's either chasing the first pitch out of the strike zone or swinging at pitches really he can't do anything with, or he's watching meatballs go by. He just can't figure it out right now. And that's what happens when you're slumping and when you're struggling. You're just making wrong decisions. You're making a bad decision pretty much every time you're at the plate. But he's 0-2 virtually every at bat and playing, and at that, and then on the defensive, where he's hitting weak ground balls. And we saw it in the ninth inning, right? He hits that home run in the eighth, and then Bryce Harper comes up as the winning run. Runners on first and second and one out in the bottom of the ninth inning. Phillies down 5-3, and he's got a chance to be the hero, to build on that home run the inning before. But again, fell behind in the count and then skied out to shortstop for the second out of the inning. My cynical nature was furious and just like, oh, of course you're not going to get a big hit in that spot, Bryce. That's not what you do anymore. You don't come through in those spots anymore. The World Baseball Classic aside, that's not what you do. You don't get the big hit with runners in scoring position anymore. That's not in your DNA, but that's not fair. That's not fair. And it's still early, but I can't help that little voice inside my head, that cynical little angry Johnny voice yelling at Bryce Harper for looking like the same player he was last year. Not elite so far for Bryce Harper. Brandon Marsh also could have won the game in the ninth inning after the Edmundo Sosa hit. Adolis Garcia walked to load the bases, but Brandon Marsh flied out to end the inning, and the game went into extra innings. Christopher Sanchez did not have his best command on Wednesday, but battled for 5 1/3 innings, gave up just the one run, but did allow 8 base runners, 4 walks, and 4 hits with 7 strikeouts. Duran, who I have been watching, and just the stuff is still really good with him, but just giving up more, I mean, he's such a confusing pitcher because from batter to batter, he'll absolutely destroy someone one at bat. And then he gives up some hard contact to the next couple of guys. Like he has not been locked down at the end of last year and so far at the beginning of this year. I'm just not feeling that level of confidence with him that we did when he first came to Philadelphia. And maybe we got spoiled by that early run that he had where he was virtually untouchable. But he did a better job this time. He gave up 2 runs with the zombie runners on second, with the zombie runner on second in the 10th against the Rangers last Saturday. In the same situation in the 10th inning on Wednesday, did better. Held the Nats off the scoreboard thanks to that line-out double play and the leaping catch by Edmundo Sosa. But a better outing from Duran, and he pitched pretty well against the Nationals here in this series. The bats, of course, especially at the top of the lineup, remain quiet. If low batting averages offend you, just skip ahead 30 seconds. Turner is now batting. Trey Turner 5-for-26 this year, a 192 average on the season. Kyle Schwarber is hitting 182. Bryce Harper 120. Alec Bohm 095 on the season so far. Had that big 3-run home run on opening day, and we haven't seen him since. Bryson Stott is hitting 200. Remember that red hot spring? Oh, he's going to carry it up. Nope, not yet. And JT Realmuto batting 200 as well. One of the few Philly regulars, aside from Brandon Marsh and Justin Crawford, hitting the ball well is newcomer Adolis Garcia. Off to a very good start. And he did fail to catch a foul fly ball in right field on Wednesday. He was a little bit nervous about where the wall was and kind of let it drop. It wasn't a for who, for what moment like we saw with Ricky Waters back in the day, but a little nervous about going up against the fence there and failed to haul in a fly ball. I was a little bit worried that the fan base was going to get on him for that, but he had his first home run of the season on Tuesday, a big blast, one of the keys to the Phillies winning that game on Tuesday. And in his last 8 balls in play, the exit velocity is pretty ridiculous. 104 miles an hour on a single, 97.7 miles an hour on his home run Tuesday. a flyout that was 91 miles an hour off the bat, 97 mile an hour ground out, a double that was 101, a lineout that was a 102.5, a single that was 106.4, and a sacrifice fly that was 106 miles an hour. He is scalding the ball when he puts it in the when he puts it in play right now, and he's not chasing. He's not chasing. He's having some pretty good at bats. He is picking up where he left off late in the spring when he started to get it all together and start to hit the ball hard. We're seeing some good things from Adolis Garcia. He's off to a better start than I was expecting him to get off to. So credit to Adolis Garcia, who the newcomer in right field, certainly an improvement over Nick Castellanos here in the early going so far, but still a lot of time left here in the regular season. But the Phillies win a three-game series against the Nationals, really a series they didn't have any business winning. This could have very easily been a Washington Nationals sweep of the Phillies, and Nationals fans like my oldest son, Ethan, crestfallen a bit after and failing to take advantage, especially after blowing a 5-1 lead with only nine outs left to go. You know, you would love to see, if you're a Nationals fan, your young team take advantage of beating the two-time defending National League East champions in their home ballpark. But honestly, that is the difference between these two teams right now. The Nationals are just not ready yet. They're not ready to take advantage, and they opened the door for the Phillies. And for all of the talk about the Phillies looking like a disinterested team, I saw Smarty Jones, one of our Good Fight writers, mention this online. For all the talk that a lot of fans have, and maybe you have been thinking this too, that the team looks disinterested so far, and I can see that with some of the defensive miscues and lapses we've seen so far, but they've had two ninth inning comebacks here in their first six games, which shows they can get up off the mat. And fight to the last out. And when a team is not hitting with runners in scoring position, and when the offense is flailing going 1-2-3, a team can look disinterested, but when it's not really the case, they're just slumping and struggling. So I tell you what, that Wednesday game, the whole tone of this podcast is different because they ended up pulling out that win on Wednesday. I was prepared for a much different podcast here with you guys on Wednesday based on how they played, especially the offense. And the Taijuan Walker start. Just a very ugly start to the series. But the Phillies get their first win of the season, their first series win of the season against the Washington Nationals. Well, if you are online at all as a baseball fan and you enjoy looking at baseball clips like I do, whether you're on any of the platforms, but specifically for me, the X platform, but you're familiar with Pitching Ninja, okay? You're familiar with all of the fantastic social media content that Rob Friedman puts out through the Pitching Ninja social media apps and platforms and all of that. It's just tremendous stuff. We've all been enjoying it for a lot of years, and Rob has become one of the foremost experts on pitching in Major League Baseball, and he's written a new book. It's sitting behind me right there. It's called Unhittable: How Technology, Mavericks, and Innovators Engineered Baseball's New Era of Pitching Dominance. And we're going to talk to him about the book and get his insights on the Phillies pitching staff a little bit too here over the next few minutes. Rob, welcome to Hitting Season. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I have been following your accounts for years and have enjoyed it. You, by the way, have the coolest logo. I've been so envious of I'm sure you must sell a ton of hats and t-shirts, and I know you sell all that stuff, but it's so brilliant. who came up with the Pitching Ninja logo?
It was Kenny from RotoWare. Like, he just approached me one day and DM'd me and said, hey, I got an idea for a logo. And he showed me, and I was like, dude, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so great. It's so great. Totally, totally marketable too. So, but I mean, like I said, you have become one of the guys who I think even, you know, major league pitchers have touted you. They've obviously written some glowing recommendations for your book. Tarek Skubal, one of the best in the business, is one of them. And you really do a great job of diving into why we are seeing pitchers with such dynamic stuff nowadays. I mean, it seems like every pitching staff has at least a half a dozen, if not more, pitchers who are able to get up into the upper 90s. And I remember a time when Billy Wagner was in Philadelphia and everybody salivated over whether or not he was going to come close to hitting 100 on the gun. And now there's probably a dozen to two dozen pitchers in baseball who are around there. And Andrew Painter made his major league debut for the Phillies last night, throwing 97, 98 miles an hour. Those guys used to be unicorns, and now it seems like we see them all the time, especially at the top end of the starting rotation. So what's behind this? I mean, there's obviously a lot of different things, but you talk about a guy named Tom House, who is really kind of at the beginnings of getting pitchers to kind of change how they do things, right?
Yeah, Tom is probably the first dude to kind of take pitchers apart. He worked with Nolan Ryan, so he was able to dissect Nolan Ryan's mechanics. And his idea was, Nolan Ryan's not a special human. Like, he's big, he's strong, but he's got two legs and arms like everybody else and moves a certain way. So how can I make more people throw like that? And he started doing something simple, like looking at pictures and stuff. Now we have like biomechanical labs and lots of other things that we can measure how pitchers move. We can really engineer pitchers to throw harder. And that's really the difference. It used to be you were either born with it or not, and people thought you couldn't teach someone to throw harder. Now we can teach everything. Like, we can teach throwing hard. We can, through lifting, through proper mechanics, we can teach pitch design to help you throw nastier pitches. We can tell you where to spot a pitch on a batter to get them out. Like, pitchers have a ton of technology in their favor that didn't exist back in the day. And honestly, maybe some of these olden time pitchers might have been better than they were. Like, you know, I'm not saying that we're unique today. This is technology that could make pitchers better at any era.
So what are some of the things specifically that is available now today that wasn't around 30 years ago that really is helping pitchers to access the type of velocity that we didn't see for such a long time?
Well, things like weighted balls. Weighted balls was something that people thought were going to hurt you. Instead, it actually helps you build up your arm, helps you actually recruit more muscles from your body to throw harder. We have biomechanical labs that, you know, you put markers on your body to see how you move and compare it to the top high-end pitchers. We now know that back in the day, they used to look for farm-strong pitchers. Like, hey, if you were on a farm, you were a strong dude, but don't lift weights because you might get muscle bound. Now we know that you can lift, you can do strength and conditioning, get strong just like you would if you were on a farm. And we have programs to do it. So we have pitchers now. If you go back and look at games from the 70s and 60s, you had guys that were kind of out of shape. Now you have guys that pretty much most pitchers strong and athletic. So many different things, force plates, slow-mo cameras too, to capture each bit of movement that somebody has. So, and access to video on how other pitchers move. Before, it used to be pictures. Like, you were lucky to get a good picture of somebody. Now you have video of every game.
Yeah, you don't see the Rick Rushels of the world anymore here in modern baseball. And for you, for those of you listening who are too young to know that name, I would like for you to go look up a highlight of the 1989 All-Star game, the Bo Jackson game, and just enjoy watching Rick Rushel sling it. It's a good time. So, but I mean, we have seen all of these different technologies emerge, and obviously we are seeing pitchers throwing harder, and we'll get into the nastier breaking stuff in a minute too, because it's not just velocity that we're seeing an uptick in, but you do address in your book some of the issues that we've had with injuries. Obviously, the Phillies had Andrew Painter debut, like I just said a second ago, but we were supposed to see him 2 years ago. And of course, he suffered a UCL injury that required Tommy John surgery, forced him to miss all of 23 and 24, and was working his way back from it last year. Now finally is here and still young. And so everything looks like it's working out. And for most of the pitchers who get Tommy John, they are able to come back from it. Not all of them, but most of them. But there is that concern. I mean, and there have been books written about this. You know, Jeff Passan's written a book about it. You know, it's a worry that we do have pitchers who are requiring the surgery more frequently than we used to. So is that a trade-off? I mean, is there an inherent danger to injury by doing some of these things that pitchers are doing nowadays?
There's a little bit of a trade-off, definitely. I mean, anytime you're an athlete, you're redlining your body. There's not a lot of athletes that are just so much better than anybody that they don't have to go 100%. So you have pitchers that when you're being judged on velo, you're pushing yourself. You're an athlete. You're competitive. You want to hit that number because you know that that's going to mean more money to you or more success on the field. And velo does correlate very highly with good results for hitters. So you are going to drive yourself to do that. But also, the ready availability of surgeries and the good outcomes of it is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Back in the day, in the 60s and 70s, you were just washed up. You had dead arm and you were never heard from again. Now we can fix you and get you back on the field. It's like there were no open heart surgeries in the 1700s because the patient would die. now we can do it and get you out of the hospital right away. So part of it is the success of the surgery, and part of it is redlining bodies.
I want to talk about, we just mentioned breaking pitches and some of the nasty stuff we've seen right now. And obviously the biomechanics can help with that a lot. But how are pitching coaches too at the major league level and the coaching staffs? Like what kind of things are they doing to try and help pitchers access new pitches, for example? I mean, Jesus Luzardo figures out a whole new pitch last year and suddenly is a Cy Young contender, right? I mean, like this is not an unusual story. We've been seeing this more and more over the last few years.
There are so many different ways to do it, and some of it rides on ultra slow-mo cameras like Edgetronics, so you can see exactly how the ball is leaving your hand. We discovered new forces on the baseball, amazingly, after like 150 years, seam-shifted wake. So now we can design pitches that move not just based on the spin of the ball, but based on the spin axis of the ball that pitchers knew back in the day. Like they said, oh, it caught a seam or it moved funny when I did this. But we weren't able to know why and weren't able to replicate it. So that's why the sweeper is taken off, or things like wicked two-seamers that move like ridiculous amounts, more than you could ever imagine. So those are things that help you design pitches. And then things like, so Orion Kerkering, for example, learned a pitch from my Dropbox. Like he learned it from my YouTube channel or my Dropbox and just looked at other pitchers, because I do interviews with everybody. And I get them to share grips and, you know, they pick it up. So there's a bunch of cool ways to learn it, but also just looking at people's arsenals, and no longer are pitches like mysteries. We now know how they move, and we can say, you're missing this pitch, because you look at a scatter plot of pitches and you say, oh, if you only had this, you'd be more effective. And then you can learn it.
So who is your favorite pitcher to watch right now? Do you have a favorite, that a guy you just can't miss?
Well, one that is maybe under radar for some fans out there is Nolan McLean. Like, I love his stuff. It's designed in a lab for me, basically. It gets ridiculous movement east to west. He throws hard. He's a competitor. I love guys like that. I love the way he throws. And it just makes for some amazing content. Someone like Paul Skenes, obviously. Someone like Tarek Skubal, obviously. They're Cy Young Award winners. They have great work ethic, great dudes. But Nolan McLean kind of flies a little bit under radar if you don't pay careful attention.
Now, give me a pitcher who maybe isn't a hard thrower. Somebody who doesn't throw 96, 97, 98. Maybe someone who lives in the 92s, 93, 94 mile an hour range and really has to rely on secondary pitches to kind of and command to full. Because that was the name of the game back in the day. Like Greg Maddux is a prime example of this, and maybe the greatest example of this we've ever seen. Command, you know, and the movement on his two-seamer was, I mean, that's nasty in and of itself, but he was not a guy who was going to blow the ball by you. He just could put the ball wherever he wanted, whenever he wanted, and was maybe the smartest pitcher we've ever seen, kind of knowing how to read hitters. Who is there a guy, not to that level, of course, but who's a guy in Major League Baseball right now that you think is just kind of like an artist in terms of being able to set hitters up and maybe doesn't have 97 and 98 miles an hour in the tank?
Well, I mean, Ranger Suarez has shown some of that. Like he is a kind of an old school pitcher. Kyle Hendricks, obviously everybody knows, kind of almost modeled himself after Greg Maddux. Yamamoto throws hard, but he doesn't throw 100. But to me, that is the ultimate example of a pitching artist, because he dots everything almost exactly where he wants to. He's a combination of like Pedro and Greg Maddux, very smart dude who takes who's pitching extremely seriously.
So I'm going to ask you a couple of Phillies questions then. As you look at this Phillies pitching staff, and you can look at starters or relievers here, but who has the best overall stuff on the Phillies pitching staff right now?
I mean, I love Duran coming in. I've always loved him. I've loved him since he was on the Twins. I think his stuff is like when you're throwing 100 mile an hour splinkers and, you know, ridiculous knuckle curves and, you know, topping at 105 miles an hour on the bump. It's hard not to like that. Number of good pitchers. Like I really like what I saw out of Andrew Painter. I've seen him the last few years, obviously a great pitching talent. Zach Wheeler. I mean, Zach Wheeler seems to be the model for so many pitchers nowadays. He's really opened up the eyes of a lot of guys, including like Brian Wu modeled his stuff after Zach Wheeler. So, I think Wheeler's highly influential and an extremely talented pitcher.
All right, so that's give me some names of Phillies pitchers you really like, but who has the best single pitch on the Phillies in the Phillies starting in the Phillies pitching staff?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say Duran's splinker or his knuckle curve I would give him either one of those because I wouldn't want to face it, nor does any hitter.
Last thing for you here, Rob. I mean, so we I think we're all acknowledging maybe this is the greatest era of pitching in Major League history. I know when they raised the mound, everything got pretty kooky there for a couple of years, and then hitters adjusted. Do you see hitters adjusting to what pitchers are doing now? And, you know, I sometimes watch pitchers do the things they do, and I don't know how anyone ever gets a hit. I mean, they're pros. They all been doing this their whole lives, so I get it. We see the home runs and everything, but how hard, what kind of a place are we in right now in terms of the most difficult it's ever been for hitters to hit?
You nailed it. It is the most difficult it's ever been for hitters to hit. And it's very hard for them to catch up. And it's part of the underlying theme of the book is, like, I go over some of the technologies they use to try to catch up, like Traject, which mirrors the pitches they're going to see in a game as the same arm slot and everything. So you can take away a pitcher's nasty pitch by seeing it over and over again. But it's really hard because baseball's a weird sport in that the offense doesn't have the ball. The offense, I consider a pitcher on offense, and the hitter's counterpunching or has to react. And when you're reacting and somebody knows your weakness, can put the ball where they want, can throw a pitch as nasty as they want, and throw it as hard as they want, and take as much time and mess with your timing as much as they want too, it's really hard to be a hitter. And I hope that that's something people get out of it and understand about the sport. So stop yelling at guys for why did you swing at that? Understand that tunneling and everything else makes it really hard for hitters. But two, there are technologies that will help them compete. There is a very high talented hitter pool. And then there may have to be adjustments. ABS is one of them. Like, at least you're getting consistent strike zones that a hitter now knows where the strike zone is. And you can make it bigger or smaller in future years. Maybe they'll make it smaller and give hitters a little bit more of an advantage, make pitchers have to come in the zone a little bit more. That's really going to be the name of the game, is driving pitchers to be in the zone more and letting hitters chase less. But it's hard. I mean, maybe technologies like AI to pick up pitch tipping is another thing.
Yeah.
I know I've gone through Phillies pitchers, and they have had some issues pitch tipping from time to time. Lizardo was one of them.
Yeah.
And you can use AI to pick up and say, pick it up pretty easily, and also help, you know, on your end, eliminate that pitch tipping.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's tough time to be a hitter.
Yeah, and to pitch tipping. I mean, you don't realize how much the AI is into that, because I mean, you used to have to use your eyes and stuff, and now you've got AI. I know I said that was the last one. One more real quick thing for you. What do you think about the ABS, the new automatic ball strike system? You like the challenges? Is it good for baseball?
I love it. Like, it is one of my favorite things. I think it adds some gamesmanship to the sport. It shows off another talent that players have, like knowing the strike zone or not knowing the strike zone. It makes catchers potentially more valuable, and also makes umpires accountable. And we've been seeing guys get away with these crappy strike zones for so long. No more. And I love it. Like, give me that. I love it.
CB Buckner is having a time so far here in the early stages of 2026.
I cried a tear for
it. I know, right? Everybody, single tear for CB Buckner. Yeah. Well, folks, make sure you run out. If you're interested in this kind of thing, you love baseball content and you want to learn more about the pitching side of the game, first of all, there's no better follow on social media than @PitchingNinja. But you want to check out Rob Friedman's book, Unhittable: How Technology, Mavericks, and Innovators Engineered Baseball's New Era of Pitching Dominance. Rob, thank you for joining me here on Hittin' Season. It's a pleasure. Hope we can do it again down the road.
Thanks for having me on. It's great.
All right, a couple of quick things. Give you a rehab update on two Phillies regulars who are down in AAA trying to get back to the big club. The Inquirer's Scott Lauber reports that Zach Wheeler will pitch 4 innings, throw around 50 or 55 pitches for Lehigh Valley in Durham, North Carolina on Friday. So he's with the Iron Pigs, still trying to ramp back up. And now it doesn't sound like we're talking about Zach Wheeler still trying to find his stuff. Right now it's about building up his pitch limit, getting him ready to rejoin the Phillies here. I don't know, 2 more starts? Maybe for Zach Wheeler, could it be as soon as that, 2 more rehab starts? I think they probably want to get him to the point where he can throw 90 pitches with relative ease before calling him back up. But he's on the fast track to returning to the Phillies here in 2026. And then reliever Orion Kirkgreen sounds like he is very close as well. Pitched on back-to-back nights for the first time and threw a scoreless inning on Wednesday night, his fastball topping out at 97.6 miles an hour. So it sounds like he could be back very, very soon. All right, up next, the Phillies are off on Thursday, so fans can revel in Wednesday's comeback victory. You can watch that Justin Crawford walk-off a number of times between now and when the Phillies get back on the field on Friday. They will be in Colorado this weekend for a three-game series against what is probably the worst team in baseball, the Rockies. Now, the Phillies have had their issues playing in Colorado over the years. It is sometimes not an easy place to play, even when the Rockies are really bad, which is, generally speaking, most of the time. So, but they will be in Colorado for a three-game series against the Rockies this weekend. It's a six-game West Coast trip for the Phils that they're heading out on. Aaron Nola will match up against Michael Lorenzen. Two Team Italy starters will be facing off each other on Friday afternoon at 4:10 Eastern time. And then Jesus Luzardo will go up against Jose Quintana on Saturday. That's a night game at 8:10. Jesus Luzardo trying to bounce back from a lackluster performance against the Rangers in the game in the third game of the season. And then Taiwan Walker, who got blitzed by the Nationals on Monday, will go up against Tomoyuki Sugano in the afternoon game on Sunday at 3:10. And then, like I said, the Phillies head to San Francisco for a three-game series against the Giants Monday through Wednesday. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Again, please tell your friends, your family members, listen, if you've got enemies, tell them about Hittin' Season. Maybe they'll listen to you. Maybe it's a way you can bridge the gap between you two. But tell them we are here. Tell them that we are here to take them through the 2026 season. We're going to have great interviews lined up all year with folks like Rob Friedman. We'll talk to other different authors. We'll talk to analysts. We'll talk to folks throughout inside and outside baseball. And it's going to be stuff that really interested baseball nerds will like, but also for the regular fan, for the people who don't necessarily know about spin rate and all the different metrics that we get into some of that, because we think that some of that stuff can help make baseball more fun. And some of that stuff is important to understand what's happening in baseball. But also, if you just like to casually watch the Phillies, we're here for that too. And we can speak that language. We're going to speak that language all season for you. So come along for the ride and tell your friends and family members to do the same. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcast. And if you want to email the show, shoot an email to hittinseason@billypenn.com. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.